Welcome to On Texas Football. I'm Bobby Burton, your host, joined by Rod Babers, the CJ Vogel. This is the Sunday night live stream brought to you by our friend Joe Brown, the veteran mortgage broker over at Southside Bank. Give him a call, 512-663-4744. If you are considering making a home purchase here soon and need a mortgage broker, Rod, CJ, big week for the Longhorns in a bunch of spring sports. In fact, Longhorns baseball, they sweep Kansas to finish out the regular season. Now they're headed to the Big 12 baseball tournament on Tuesday. Women's softball won the regional here in Austin. They go again now on Thursday. They're taking on A&M in the super regionals. The men's tennis team is currently locked 3-3 in the national championship match. Literally, they've played six matches or completed six matches so far. It's tied 3-3. There's a single match left. They're playing TCU right now. And there it is right now. TCU up 3-2 in the third set. And you know what? Texas got a hold there. Jonah Braswell, young man out of IMG Academy, getting taken to the limit here. If Texas wins that match, they're national champions. If they don't, they are second to TCU. It came down to the Big 12, two Big 12 teams for that one. Also, recruiting-wise, got some news and notes to talk about. Jerry Hamilton, our friend, did not make it tonight. He actually did a little hi up on the message boards, which usually connotes that there's been a commitment for the Longhorns, or actually does denote that there has been one or more. And we're waiting on right now is to see when that player might announce their decision. So we're waiting on that, as well as Texas had its big NIL function on Friday and Saturday, culminating not only with a golf tournament on Friday, but not so silent auction last night, Rod, before the concert kicked off. Several different auction items went for six-figure sums.
Ooh, wow.
All to benefit Texas NIL efforts. I am led to believe that Texas and the NIL Texas One Fund up to seven figures in that earning in that category last night and through the weekend. Good job by those guys getting the funds they need for Longhorn football and other sports at this point, That's important to note as well. Rod, you and CJ been out and about this weekend. What have you been up to, and what are you hearing of late, bud?
Yeah, I actually kind of want to talk about the achievement of the athletic department. I saw that they set the record for Big 12 championships overall, conference record for the most titles in a season. Was it 15 of them? I mean, I don't think it's a coincidence at all that Texas is they're prioritizing their NIL. Of course, they're one of the leaders in the NIL space, and that also they're having, you know, unprecedented success all across the board. Now, this is a big part. CDC is a big part of this, you know, Kevin Elotype behind the scenes and Jay Harden. So the Holy Trinity behind the scenes is united, right? The BBs in the boxes, Mac Brown and DKR, you should describe it. But, you know, he's done a great job of hiring coaches. They've done a really good job of that. But I think it's also linked to Texas efforts in NIL and them being one of the national leaders in that space. I mean, nationally, everybody talks about what a presence Texas has when it comes to NIL, in terms of their being on a young man's radar, young woman's radar as well. You're talking about all the sports here. So you could argue that it may help out the some of the non-revenue generating sports as much, if not more, than it helps out even the biggest sports that you're talking about, football, basketball, and baseball.
I completely agree. I mean, I think that is a major point of emphasis, not only in sports like tennis or golf or volleyball, where, you know, there's not very many teams that are competitive there. Women's basketball, Vic Schaefer auctioned off something on Saturday night that went for really good funds for his program as well. So I think that this is part of what it's going down or what's happening right now in college sports. CJ, what about you, bud? What did you hear or think about? What are you thinking about from the weekend?
Well, it's all about Texas athletics, Bobby. I mean, you mentioned it, the NIL side, you know, kind of behind the scenes a little bit. But, hey, you start looking at the professional levels now. Hey, Miles Turner just made the Eastern Conference Finals. You turn on ESPN at the moment, you got Bryce Elder on the mound for the Braves. So Texas athletics ranging, you know, really more so beyond the college athletics as well. And, you know, it's interesting. We've talked about that big tennis match going on at the moment for all the marbles. You know, it's big in the sense of what that might entail for the Director's Cup. And I know that Texas has been in that contention. They've won it back-to-back years, you know, a few years ago as well. So that's very important for this athletic department. And, you hear Chris Del Conte kind of speak about that. You can tell right away that means something to him. That trophy, that award, that recognition of the Texas Athletics Department means something to him and the folks inside that building. So that's a big battle because I know that they're, you know, right up there with Stanford again this year. I think they have a pretty significant lead at the moment, or at least projected to be in the lead. And, of course, baseball, softball, we'll see how far they go now that their postseasons have arrived. But that's a big deal.
We'll be talking about that next, I think it's Friday or Saturday. Our friend that does the Director Cup update will be on with us, giving us the latest based on his score predictions, et cetera. The Longhorns couldn't have done themselves any damage by getting to the national championship match here in tennis. Obviously, softball moving forward is good. Baseball firmly in the tournament now with the sweep of Kansas, et cetera. So all of that is good stuff that we'll be going over. We'll be talking a little recruiting tonight as well. We got some news there that we want to share. And we'll be going over and taking your questions too. Rod Babers, CJ Vogel, and myself, Bobby Burton. Before we get there, I want to say thank you to our sponsor for the Sunday Night live stream. It's our friend Joe Brown. Joe's been providing mortgages in Austin and around Texas for more than three decades. Through Southside Bank, he can actually do it around the country, too. So if you're checking in from anywhere, make sure you give Joe a call. 512-663-4744. 512-663-4744. Joe's a proud Navy veteran, also a devout Longhorn fan, 2 degrees from the University of Texas, and also just a real excellent guy. 25, 30-plus years, I believe, in the mortgage business. He knows what you need if you're looking to get going on that, especially any kind of, armed forces loan, anything like that. Joe is a good resource for anybody looking to buy a new home. All right. Hey, Rod and CJ, we mentioned a little bit of recruiting news. We talked briefly about the commitment for Texas. We're not going to give any hints for that. That's not what we do here. But we will talk about the Longhorns and their class at this point. Also, I want to say this, Jerry Hamilton passed this on, Dia Bell, the quarterback. We think that Texas is really taking a strong look at him. He's out of American Heritage High School down in Florida. Troy Hune out of Mission Viejo in California. Those seem to be the two quarterbacks Texas is focused on for the class of 2026. Bell now has scheduled an additional visit outside of Texas June 1st, and that's going to be to LSU June 13th and 14th. So that's happening as well. CJ, give us a little roundup of where Texas is on the recruiting trail and what's to look forward to in the week ahead with the big elite camp coming up in a week and a half.
Yeah, the elite camp is going to be interesting, Bobby, because, of course, you'll have both of those 2026 quarterbacks on campus throwing at the same time, as well as who could potentially be a big 2027 target as well. That's Weston Nielsen out of Bastrop. That's coming up. Of course, we saw a lot of coaches this past week in Houston doing a lot of efforts to really kind of bolster that kind of recruiting area in H-Town. Of course, Chris Jackson actually made a couple stops out in Georgia. So, Bobby, we've talked about it in the past. This whole offseason, Texas has those West Coast ties, and they're trying to get more in tune in the deep South with Georgia. I think it's interesting that it was Chris Jackson actually making the trip out that direction instead of a Kenny Baker or Tashard Choice, folks that we know have certainly have the connections to that area and have success in that Georgia area. So really interesting to me that they're kind of becoming a more well-versed kind of, you know, geographically speaking, if that makes sense. But that was interesting. That stood out to me a little bit. Of course, Texas and Chris Jackson offered a 6'6 tight end, hybrid flex wide receiver, point throw. He's going to be a top 15's top 30 player in the entire country for his class. We'll see, of course, pulling those elite guys out of Georgia, not an easy thing to do, but Texas certainly making the efforts right now, and it certainly helps now that you're getting more and more coaches making the trip out that direction as well.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Rod, we've talked a little bit about this stuff, and, you know, all the stars were out over the weekend. Vince Young was up at the Texas One Fund gathering yesterday. They had all the coaches out at the golf tourney. You know, I got a chance to play with Brian Boddicker and Jackson Shipley. They were in our group of five in the scramble on Friday. I've got news for you guys.
Okay.
Unlike anything that you would expect, you know, or not anything you wouldn't expect, a Shipley is pretty good at other sports.
It's in the genes, right?
Shipley's pretty good at golf, fellas. I think it was a golf scramble, so you use the best ball or whatever. I think we used his 75-80% of the time. I mean, it wasn't even funny. It was just, okay, yeah, he's the one that we need to use. We brought him in. We went like this.
No. What other former athletes are really good golfers out there?
Oh, you know, I don't know. Drew Stubbs, the former baseball player. I think he was one of the winners.
Okay.
Blake Gideon was one of the winners as well. Okay. Obviously, the coaches were out there playing, et cetera. Right. Sark, hey, here's the deal with Sark. You know what he did? It was pretty cool. All Sark did was go around and putt.
Hey.
He took an extra putt on the putting greens.
He's the finisher, Bobby.
Let me try to roll this up there for you.
He's a closer. Yeah, y'all do all the hard work. I'm going to come close the deal, baby.
That's what he's doing out there.
If I get recruited, he'll come get the putt, the big putt, baby. I like that. Nice. Yeah, that's pretty cool. So that's it. So who won the group scramble? Is that?
I think it was I can't remember exactly who. They were minus 17. There's only 18 holes. And they were minus 17. So there's some people that took golf seriously. Yeah. I'm not one of those people. I bet
Quan was out there. Quan spends a lot of time on the golf course. I know Quan gets it going.
I didn't see him out there. Okay. I saw a number of different guys. I'm trying to think. Drew Stubbs was one that is really good. Boddicker was pretty good. Boddicker's like 6'8". You know, he's just, how do you golf that when you're that tall?
Special made clubs, man. You got to get the dang special made.
Hey, the joke was in golf, if you hit a ball out of bounds or near an obstruction or wherever, you get a club length. We always took the Boddicker club length.
Yeah.
Yeah, give ourselves a little more room to go there. All right, look, give you an update real quick on the tennis match. It is not, I don't think it's going Texas's way right now, guys. It is 4-3. TCU's up in the third set right now. Well, it's not out of the, they're on serve at the very least, but TCU is up right now 4-3 in the third set. The winner of this match, Jonah Braswell versus Sebastian Gorzny of TCU, wins the national championship. I would like nothing more to end this broadcast tonight by saying light the tower. Yeah. That would be that's a fun thing to do on here. All right, we're going to get to some questions, so please feel free to get those in, guys. We'll talk about those and some of your questions that you have. CJ, I'm going to start with a little recruiting question right now for you. Where do you think Texas sits right now overall with its class? And more importantly, not just where do they sit, how do you think they're doing from a momentum-wise as they head into the all-important month of June? Because I really do believe June is going to be huge this year. It's been huge in past years, but I get a feeling that they're on the precipice of something here.
Yeah, definitely. We see Texas recruiting start to heat up with the summer months. You know, that's kind of been the trend under Sarkisian. We've seen it before. We'll see it again. Three commitments in the last month and a half. I know that might not sound like a lot in general, but you are getting a little bit of a taste of what's to come. Obviously, Jerry putting up a high earlier today also indicates that more is on the way, and I do think Texas fans will be pleased with this addition to the 2025. But I like where it sits right now, Bobby, and I think you look at it, they've attacked it almost every single position on the field at the moment for at least one guy, right? You have an edge guy, you have a linebacker, of course, the offensive side of the ball, you're looking and things are really moving interestingly on the wide receiver front, but you got a running back, quarterback. You just started with Jackson Christian on the offensive line. To me, it's a good start, and I like the pieces. Brandon Brown's been obviously in the class for a while, really talented defensive lineman. I love what Texas has with Elijah Barnes. Big fan of Lance Jackson as well. I think that front seven is in a really good situation at the moment on the defensive side of the ball. And, you know, that's to be expected. Moving into the SEC, that's going to have a lot of attention in the next conference for Texas moving forward for their future. You have to get those big bodies, those game-changing, program-changing, altering guys. Right now, I think Texas is in the fold for a number of them. And then you look at the top prospects that Texas is in for as well. DeCorian Moore, Riley Pettijohn, of course, Michael Fasusi, the Coleman twins. You look at it, I think it's a really, really strong start. And of course, with over 45 official visitors coming in the month of June, you'll really start to see some of those fireworks as we lead into the 4th of July, where these coaches will finally have a little bit of a break in that month before kicking things off for the season as well.
Hey, I got a question for both you guys. Since this is we've talked about it, right? Best offseason Texas football has had, not only in a decade plus, but hell, maybe – you know, probably going back, at least in a social media age. And then you got to go back to maybe the mid-2000s or something since Texas had an offseason with this much buzz. Video game, the draft, the 11 guys drafted, the 40-yard dash record by Xavier Worthy, you know, Arch Manning showing out in the spring game. It just seems like it's buzz after buzz, right? A lot of good mojo for Texas. Are you starting to see that manifest itself in recruiting yet, or is that something that's delayed? Is that something we don't see? Is it still the same? Because you guys have been covering the Sark regime now. At this time of year, are we seeing more buzz, same buzz, even though the offseason has been, for Texas fans, seems like a dream offseason pretty much?
Here's what I would say to you, Rod. I've been doing this 30 years. It's definitely on the high end of that. You know, it comes there's cycles. There's about 10 years there where there wasn't much, except coming off the Georgia win in the Sugar Bowl. Yeah. But even that wasn't like this. It's just been – CJ wrote an article the other day about it on TexasFootball.com. And really, it's just been one thing after another, to your point, Rod. And it builds into a crescendo of sorts, right? I mean, and I think everything plays into it. A lot of it plays into it. And the success that the Longhorns had this year – and Steve Sarkisian's third year was huge. I also think that, you know, the fact that, you know, Xavier Worthy goes out and does what he does, and then Adonai Mitchell comes in and ends up being a guy too, and gets drafted. And then you have other guys that get, I mean, what is it, 11 players got drafted?
Yep.
All of that combined together, I just think it's ahead of the game from where it's been in the last, probably 15 years is what I would say.
You see it on the recruiting trail, Rod, to your question. Obviously, I spoke with Riley Pettijohn about a week ago and kind of picked his brain a little bit about what he thought about development at Texas. Texas just sent 11 guys to the NFL. What did he think about that? He was like, yeah, now I know if I go to Texas, that will be a place I can get developed. That wasn't always the case. And we've obviously had this conversation in the past where big-time players come to Texas and for whatever the reason, whether it be health, whether it be lack of development, whether it be coaching, you just don't see them live up to the billing. That was the perspective around Texas for a while, right? You know, it just wasn't a place where you go out and maximize your talent. That's changed, I think, under Sarkisian, and that's happened with multiple guys this year getting drafted that I think coming into this conversation a year ago, we were thinking, yeah, there's probably no shot this guy is hearing his name called from the commissioner or whoever was making the draft announcing. But you look at it and at a number of different positions too. Obviously, Keelan Robinson getting drafted as a guy who only had about 15 carries a year ago. Yeah. That's impressive. His role in special teams, teams take note of that. Christian Jones playing into the fifth round, big time. Ryan Watts, a guy who maybe not having the best second half of a season or, you know, conclusion of his Texas career. At the end of the day, two-year starter at Texas, transferred in, played, got on the field. Here's his name called, goes to the Steelers. So it trickles down into recruiting. And, of course, Texas is going to use that to their advantage as well. That's in conversation with recruits. Now Texas, as we've talked about as well, the cover of the video game, they're using that as well. On the graphics, teaming out to Jamie French and Lance Jackson. Every little thing that they can get behind and use in momentum for recruiting, they're doing so. And it certainly – a great opportunity for the Longhorns to continue to maximize. And as we've talked about again, I mean, the month of June is going to be hot. And I'm not talking about the weather outside, but the recruiting trail as well. It's all coming to a head, and you'll see it come in the next month and a half.
Hey, real quick, CJ, staying with you. How many high school guys do we sign over or under 25? And outside Georgia, who will most likely be the other two teams that finish in the top three? What do you think?
Ooh. All right. Well, Justin, thanks for the super chat as well. I think you'll see Texas get right at 25. 24 was actually the number I was looking at. But I certainly think with the way that Texas is recruiting, I think they're going to take a full offensive line class. You need a full defensive line class, probably taking three or four wide receivers. You're going to keep building up with the big positions. Right now, I think you'll see 24 at the minimum. 25 to me feels right. Of course, Texas sitting right now at 83 scholarships, 82, if we're talking about who might not be on scholarship out of the portal this offseason. But right now there is room to take a full class, and, of course, still remaining room to go out and add portal guys, because Texas will continue to be aggressive in the portal each offseason. They're going to go out and find the best talent that they can. We saw it this year. We saw it a year before. They'll do it again in the next year. Who's going to be in that conversation with Georgia? I think Ohio State's up there. Oregon's in a nice spot. Will they be able to have the big names join them? We'll see. But I think Alabama's going to put together a nice class. Of course, I know Nick Saban's no longer there, but Kalen DeBoer in year one, already finding some nice success on the recruiting trail. It'll be interesting. But Ohio State definitely going to be in that conversation at the end of the day.
Yep. All right. Longhorns did lose. We're sad to report. They lost four matches to three to TCU. TCU wins the national championship over the Longhorns. Longhorns going down four matches to three to the Horned Frog. Congratulations to them on their national championship. Congratulations to the Texas men's team playing for the national championship after just winning it, I think, just 3 years ago as well. So they're a good, strong, consistent program. Hey, Rod, got a question for Patrick Roberts for you. Could we see 22 personnel used on the goal line, given how the tight end room looks? When they say 22, I always try to make sure people that are just now tuning in or just staying with us really understand what that means. Two is the first number is the number of running backs. Yeah. The second number is the number of tight ends on the field. So 22 would be two running backs, two tight ends in the red zone. What do you think about that?
I mean, it depends on how good your tight ends are in run blocking. I'm nothing against, you know, Amari Nye Black and Gunnar Helm. I think Gunnar Helm actually is a pretty capable blocker. But I don't know if that's the strength of a guy like Amari Nye Black. You got a young guy, Jordan Washington. You got Juan Davis. I don't know if run blocking is any of their strengths, right? That's not necessarily an elite trait of our tight ends. So I don't know if you'll see it from that point. You might see it from, I mean, the jumbo package like they used last year. I don't know if they got the Big 11, Big 12. So you might go with a Gunnar Helm, and if you consider this 22, but maybe it'll be big. They got Big 11, Big 12, and that's when they put the extra offensive linemen out there on the field. And maybe they'll go that route with Gunnar Helm and two backs. That's possible on the goal line. But with traditional tight ends, I don't necessarily see it with traditional tight ends for Texas. They don't have no girth and size. Sark wants to play bully ball down there. We know that.
The thing with the 22 personnel or the 20 personnel, 21 personnel that they played with, they had backs that were basically offset. It wasn't like an I formation. You know what I mean? They were basically across from one another. Whereas on the goal line, you had Byron Murphy and Tavondre Sweat lined up in big positions of running backs. I don't see them using the two running back set, at least not like they do in between the 20s.
Yeah.
Down on the goal line, no matter what it meant. I don't see them doing that for whatever reason. Maybe it's too congested at that point in time. I don't know. They wouldn't use it that down on the goal line, right? And if not, why wouldn't they, Rod?
Yeah, if Sark wants to go big, he'll just go big. Like I said, he'll probably break out the big package with the extra offensive lineman before he just kind of goes traditional 22. But Sark still wants speed on the field. He wants to give himself an option to pass game. And in a red zone, you know, you talk about on the goal line, Texas runs more RPOs or successful. There are plays that are successful, probably more RPOs than a lot of other plays. And I wonder if they still want speed on the field for those tags on the RPOs when they're down on the goal line or closer to the goal line too. So remember Sark last year, he would take the mystery out of it and just go with Tavondre Sweat, Byron Murphy on the field and just attempt to play bully ball. I think that's ultimately what he wants to do with his big humans philosophy. Just, you know what? I don't give a damn if y'all know what's coming. We can still get 3 yards in a cloud of dust anytime we want to, because we got more mass than you do. And I think he wants to get there. They weren't there last year. They couldn't necessarily just Debo teams the way they wanted to. We saw that with a couple of goal line stands by opponents last year. So it's definitely something I think Sark would consider, but I don't know this year who would be his version of a Byron Murphy and a Tavondre Sweat. Let's say he wanted to do what he did last year with those guys. Who are the extra jumbo guys? Are they just extra offensive linemen you bring in for your jumbo package this year, as opposed to your two D tackles that you did last year? That is interesting. I don't know where he'd go with that. It could just be he's got athletic offensive linemen. It could just be he's going to go that route.
If that's the case, I think it would just be Malik Ogbo. Of course, we saw him at times be that jumbo guy, that kind of flex tight end, you know, kind of throw an asterisk on whatever, you know, position he was actually labeled as a year ago. Actually had a reception at the end of the season as well. I think folks forget about that, kind of flew under the radar. But he was out in the passing game a little bit. I know he's a good athlete, played 7-on-7 back in Washington. So great athlete. Not necessarily as big as Tavondre Sweat. Not many people on the football field are at the college level. So certainly does give you that opportunity to maintain physical presence in the blocking game while also having the athleticism that you covet at that spot as kind of that big hybrid jumbo fullback option. So we'll see with where they go, but he's the pick for me for where they would go if they wanted to get big in the backfield.
Yeah, I remember they had Paul Chris was on the staff, right, at one point as an analyst at one point. And I don't know if that's still a thing or what Paul Chris is doing at this point. I'll admit ignorance on that. You guys might have an update on it. But I remember studying Paul Chris and what he could bring to the table. Remember, he's one of those guys that loved extra O-line packages playing the Big Ten, and there was some of that in the Big Ten, the extra O-line package, not just a sixth offensive lineman. You know, sometimes on their goal line packages, you would see them bring in 7 offensive linemen, use them as tight ends, use them as fullbacks. I mean, Texas might be at that point. If you're talking about going extreme with it, and you really want to get extreme, if you have enough, and Michigan actually has done this before too, makes sense, right? That's Harbaugh. He wants to play bully ball. Well, they just basically put extra offensive linemen there as tight ends, in addition to the 6th offensive lineman that you're talking about, Malik Ogbo and Andre Carrick before that. Just find another small-ish offensive lineman that you can put out there as a fullback or another tight end and just say, all right, essentially, guys, we're going 7 O-linemen out there. 7-8 O-linemen, and we'll see if you got enough girth on defense to be able to deal with that. And as long as you get right to the point of attack, that's not great, but anytime you got that much mass on the field and it's a long developing play, which happened in Texas against Oklahoma a couple of times, that's when they get you. It's got to be a quick hitter if you're going to have that much mass on the field and just get right up in it, just wedge right up in it.
All right. I forgot to mention this. Somebody mentioned it in the chat as well. Texas women's rowing also won the Big 12 championship. So that's another one. Add that one to the list of championships for the University of Texas in this record-setting year, leaving the Big 12 conference on the highest of high notes, in my opinion. All right. We also talked a little earlier, guys, about NIL and the big shindig they had over at DKR on Saturday night. Brooks and Dunn, Ryan Bingham, some other musical stars out. There was a big charity benefit to the benefit of NIL, the Texas One Fund, this weekend. It was a tremendous success, based on what I'm being told, raising more than seven plus figures on multiple seven figures for Texas NIL efforts. Going to have a couple of comments on that here. Lon Bean says, get them boys in baseball some NIL. You could dang near buy a AAA team. There's some truth to that. I will say this, and this has to do, baseball is in a unique situation. I think, as y'all know, it's, what is it, 11.7 scholarships that baseball is able to give as opposed to all of them. Well, apparently, according to the settlement negotiation going on right now with the NCAA. They may be able to allow as many scholarships as you want for baseball.
Wow.
And one of the things that Texas has done in baseball is they've tried to make up the cost of attendance at Texas through their NIL program. And maybe that's not necessarily what other teams have done. The other teams have actually focused on going out and getting higher dollar pitching, per se, with some of that funds. And so they've just apportioned their funds differently. That might be able to change now if everybody can be on scholarship. So that's something to – on a full scholarship. That's something to watch out for.
Yeah, that's a game changer in baseball, Bobby. That's the big conversation with scholarships in the baseball sport, obviously. And, you know, you hear about football scholarships in the 85 and everybody's on full 100% full rides. Not the case in baseball. So if that's, you know, the case, and then you're able to add NIL on top of that, that changes everything in the sport. And for a school like Texas, I mean, it makes a big difference there.
Yeah, I would mention I was playing in that golf tournament with Jackson Shipley. Rod, I saw you with that Shipley hat and I talked to Jackson. We're gonna allow y'all to buy Shipley hats if y'all want to.
Ooh. In the
future. That's gonna be a thing.
Wow. I talked to
Jackson a little bit about that. We're gonna figure out how. But you guys can kind of be in on it if you want to.
That's a game changer.
We'll figure out how to do it. Hey, CJ, let's talk to a little bit of recruiting here. John Turrentine up at North Crowley, Katoa up in the big offensive lineman out of Euless Trinity. Will either of those guys be at the elite camp coming up in a week or so? And if not, who else is coming besides Troy Huhn, the quarterback, and Dia Bell, the quarterback? Who are some other big names coming that are just high school juniors right now that Texas is trying to evaluate and after?
Yeah, I don't know right now about Turrentine and Katoa. Right now, obviously, they have their Texas offers. They're well kind of established on the recruiting front with the way that their recruitments have taken off recently. So more likely than not, they won't be in attendance to perform and get on the field for all the activities. Will they visit? Perhaps. I think that it's not out of the question that they'll be back on campus at some point in June. Some big names that will be coming in. Javion Martin, the Pflugerville tight end, we actually had a quick 3-4 minute interview on Texas Football a few weeks ago with him. He will be on campus. He's a really talented guy. Texas talks to him daily. That's Jeff Banks taking over that recruitment. Right down the road, he'll be coming in with his high school quarterback, Cole Taylor, who just picked up a Marshall offer. Both of them 2026. Is Cole Taylor also a tremendous two-sport athlete, big baseball player as well. So we'll see which direction he heads as he furthers his high school career. Caden McCarty is an interesting one out of Cy Ridge High School, 2027 defensive lineman. He will be in attendance the June 1st afternoon. He just picked up a Texas Tech offer. Peyton Porter out of wide receiver, 6'2", 6'3", out of Melissa. About 8 offers at the moment. Really talented guy, big body. He'll be coming in. Maddox Flint, another one who I'm a big fan of from Westlake, 2026 interior defensive line, about 6'2", 275, 280. Really, really strong, great guy to watch work out in the weight room. I got to see that in the winter a little bit. And, of course, I was at his spring game last Thursday. So got to see him on the field. He's picking up some interest. I think he'll be a power four guy when it's all said and done. So we'll see if Texas does get involved. But at the moment, those are some big-time talents coming in that I'll be looking at for June 1st and June 13th.
Gotcha. All right. Rod Babers, got a question here that's going to be, I'm going to take it a little bit different direction here, but I want to get your input on this. Cesaro says, don't take these updates for granted. Feels like every summer we heard about Nashawn Hughes becoming the guy. So that I don't know who told you that, but that wasn't me. Nashawn was not a guy that I thought was ever going to be the guy, but there's a kernel of truth here.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we need to not hype up guys, et cetera. But I'm going to say one guy that is in that category right now that we are hyping up quite a bit at a similar position, and it's based on what we heard during spring ball, and that's Trey Moore. And not just from what he did though while he was at Texas on this spring, but also from what he did last year and the year before last at UTSA. Yeah. But, you know, I agree with Cesar. Take some things with a grain of salt, but let's compare apples to apples. I mean, what do you think about the comment overall, and just where we need to, some things we need to take too serious or less seriously, like the secondary? Everybody's all over the secondary right now. What are some of the things that you think we need to take seriously and some things that maybe we don't need to?
No, that's good. I mean, I usually try to, you know, read between the lines what the coach is saying, psychoanalyze what Sark is saying a little bit. And Sark's actually pretty forthcoming, too. I enjoy Sark's media availabilities because he does give you, I think, give you some meat. But, I mean, Sark's the one bragging about his edges. He's the one bragging about Trey Moore a little bit, too. So he's the one, he's the reason that I think we all went a little bit deeper, like, okay, maybe these Trey Moore reports, and then you go back to what he did at UTSA, you know, double for that 14 sacks at UTSA, 17 tackle. I mean, he's really productive, and you go to film, and he's got the BGO. Will it translate to the next level, to the highest level, because he's going to the SEC? Like I said, Sark likes him, and Sark brags about him, and when Sark starts bragging about guys, I go back to the guys that Sark starts bragging about beforehand. And I remember when he was coming in bragging about, you know, like Rojo and how great Rojo was. And he was like, I got to get the guy on the field. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. He said, you got to get Rojo on the field. Like, he's got to get Rojo on the field. Then we find out later on the impact that Rojo was having with the program. He's like, nah, man, I got to get this guy on the field. He's not only going to be productive, but also he is kind of the emotional leader of this team, pretty much, behind the scenes. And Sark was seeing stuff that we're not privy to, of course. And so I try to listen to Coach when he's bragging about stuff. Guy, he's bragged about Trey Moore. We didn't even see a lot of him in the spring game, but he's bragged about him multiple times in media availabilities. So that makes me think there's something to the Trey Moore thing. But we'll see. But as he's got the background, he's one of those guys. So and there are other guys that, you know, so I try to listen to Sark when he's bragging about young guys. When he's talking about Malik Muhammad multiple times, and I'm like, Sark keeps bringing up Malik Muhammad all the time. You know, he's talking about, you know, guy making plays. He's a playmaker and a ball hawk. So usually that's what I go to. Sark's bringing him up multiple times, and we're hearing the reports, you know, from the insiders that we like, you know, Bobby and UCJ. We're getting those reports. In addition to some stuff that I've seen on film, I try to get multiple data points of it. So it's not just, like you said, oh, Nation News about to blow up. And it's like, well, where are you getting that from? Who's the guy that they said is, oh, this is a good one. They said somebody was basically, it reminded them of a Bosa. Who was that? Who was it? Didn't you remember this? That they said it was he's a baby Bosa on the team on the second. Remember this, CJ? It was one of the players said this player on our team.
Vosick.
Was it that?
I think it's Vosick. Yeah. Okay.
All right. So they were like,
I don't know it, Rod.
Exactly. Right. I don't remember the name of the player, but I remember the comparison. I was like, baby Bosa. Whoa, slow down there. And I'm not even going on the baby Bosa thing. I'm just saying about this basically goes back to the point that the person in the chat was making, like, slow down, baby Bosa. That's hey, Vosick looks awesome, by the way. I love he's gonna add to that edge room, but baby Bosa, let's slow down on the baby Bosa thing. And Coach Shipley had, we were doing winning drive, CJ. You remember this conversation we were having about Malik Muhammad, whether he's gonna be an all SEC first team quarterback? And Coach Shipley was like, slow down. Let's just see if he can, you know, make some plays consistently. Why are we talking about all SEC ceiling here when we ain't even necessarily seen the young man being all first team Big 12 defender yet? Let's slow down a little bit. And yeah, so I think we get ahead of ourselves. Why not? I mean, that's when your team is good, you know, it's fun to do that type of stuff, to have those, you know, kind of thought experiments. But I think, like I said, I try to make sure it's more founded. It was Christian Jones, what they called him, baby. And listen, he goes up against him, so maybe. But wait, Christian Jones lately, he's been on. I've been liking what Christian Jones has been saying. Right, a lot of what Christian Jones has been saying, we've seen materialize within the program. So I'm like, man, is Christian, was he on to something? The baby Bosa thing? Then we see at spring, we see, damn, Vosick, he just took over a couple of series and just shut down the offense. And I'm like, okay. So I'm not saying he's baby Bosa, but get multiple data points. So now we got the spring game for that. We got the Christian Jones quote. Let's see if Sark starts bringing up, you know, Vosick a little bit more, and then maybe we can jump on that. So I just think you got to have multiple points of, you know, of confirmation of that to support whatever your theory is going to be.
If I can double back on that real quick, I did look up the baby Bosa comment that was made August 3rd of 2023. So before Vosick had ever even suited up for a game. And I know he was dinged up most of last year. So we have yet to really see him, you know, outside of that spring game, put it all together. though, when he is healthy, he's a heck of a football player, and I think he's going to be a big difference maker during his time in Austin. I did want to add to that point because, I mean, when you hear about these recruits going to practices, scrimmages, whatever it is, over the last 2 months of spring ball, and you hear about them, you know, who are the big playmakers? Of course, you hear Jonte Cook, you hear Colin Simmons, because these guys, they're still young, but they have that name carries weight wherever they're coming from. Most of those DFW guys know about Anthony Hill, Colin Simmons, and Jonte Cook because of how big those names were back in the day, how much they won in high school, and obviously, you know, they're five-star caliber guys. But then you start hearing, oh, yeah, that edge guy, number 31, he makes some plays, and you start thinking, you don't know the name? No, but he was flying around. Well, if you're starting to take note of a guy who's only about 6'2 off the edge, he must be doing something right, and that's Trey Moore. And the speed and quickness that he gets off the ball, it was pointed out a number of times from many coaches, parents, prospects that we talked to as they were leaving the facility. So just doubling back on Trey Moore a little bit. I mean, it's not just Coach Sarkisian who's excited about him. I think there's a lot of folks who were able to see a little bit about him this spring and came away with it thinking, yeah, he's going to be a heck of a ball player for Texas.
He would definitely increase the depth in that room. Let's just add to that, because right now, I mean, look, you not only have a young Colin Simmons and a Trey Moore added to that room, but if Vasek comes back and actually could be productive, he's more of that strong side defensive end too. That's the Jack side, I guess, is right. And so I feel like he might be an heir apparent of some sort to Baron Sorrell at that position. Just a thought process, because he's that kind of big, tougher kind of guy that we'll see maybe down the road. All right. Kelly Horns Up says, is One Fun reaching out to Texas alums directly via email, mail, or phone? I have not received any communication, at least not yet. They actually probably have. If you get emails from Chris Del Conte, or if you even read his weekly update, he's mentioned the One Fun multiple times. It is not actually a organization that is a part of the university, so they can't actually solicit directly, but they can mention it. And so go to TexasOneFund.org, Kelly, and check it out. Plenty of places to donate there. TexasOneFund.org. Appreciate you guys doing that. Hey, Juan has a question for us, guys. You think Texas going to the SEC in general hurts A&M in every sport there is? I don't know that it hurts them in equestrian.
Every sport?
Equestrian? I don't know. Meat judging seems to be their biggest one to play. Not that that's a bad sport, by the way.
Did you see Ben and Texas Tech going at it over who had better brisket? Did you see that?
Oh.
They were going back. The official accounts were. I thought it was crazy.
It wasn't Lincoln Riley. I know that. That may have been the worst looking brisket I've ever seen in my life that Lincoln Riley put out there when he was
in California.
It was like he might have will. I don't know. It was burnt. I don't think it hurts A&M in every sport. I really don't. I think it could hurt them in football if Texas wins. What do you think, Rod or CJ?
I'll say it doesn't hurt them in every sport. It right now, honestly, I think more than anything, it just hurts their branding. They just, you know, they had branded themselves the Texas SEC school, and they were using that brand in everything, in recruiting, in, you know, the way that they were kind of promoting, you know, their brand. And I just think it really hurts that. So now they got to rebrand themselves in a certain sense, and because they're not the only Texas connection to the SEC anymore. Now you have the flagship school in the state of Texas that is part of the SEC. So I think that's what there is. I mean, in terms of if Texas is as successful as they were in the last year in the Big 12 in their first year in the SEC, oh, hell, it's going to hurt everybody brand. I mean, but especially for A&M that did everything they could to get from within underneath the shadow of Texas. And now you have that, it's almost inescapable, that shadow coming back. So they know, in every sport, they're going to have to now recruit directly against Texas. There's just no doubt about it. Now, you did it indirectly when they were in the Big 12 and you were in the SEC, because you always drop that, we're playing the SEC. All right, they play in the Big 12. They don't play at the highest level of competition in football and some of the other sports. Well, now that is no longer the case. So a rebranding for the Aggies, and we'll see where they stand in terms of rebranding. And whether, how they perform against Texas competing this year is going to be a big part of that rebranding in all sports. But we know football more than anything. That game is going to be huge. For the first time, I think it's going to be better than – bigger. I don't know if it's going to be better. It'll be bigger than the Texas OU game for the first time in, like, probably, what, 25 years or so, maybe?
I would say so. I mean, that's a good point, Rod.
I mean, Bob Stoops.
Really good point. More anticipated.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
More anticipated because it's because there's been 13 years since they last played.
Period. Yep. And we would never say that about what some people call the little brother of Texas. We wouldn't even give them that, that much respectability, that much clout. But it is. I will admit, as a Longhorn through and through, that game this year, I think it might be bigger than the Texas OU game. And that's not going to be the case every year. Texas OU is the rivalry. But this year particularly, it might be. It might sneak up on this year and be bigger than that, depending on what happens in that Texas OU game and how good OU is. That's a big part of it, because A&M is expected to be better than Oklahoma. I mean, that's what the expectation is based on the Vegas lines that we've seen. So if they are better, and we haven't even really entertained the possibility of A&M being good when Texas plays, and we don't even talk about that. And Longhorn fans don't even want to discuss it. The fact that they're good when we play them. We don't even entertain that.
The timing in which Texas plays A&M last week of the year, playing to either get into a position for an SEC berth in the championship game. What does that mean for the playoff? Could both teams be in contention? I mean, it will make a lot of postseason implications for that final week of the season. Whereas Oklahoma, I know it's still a very important game, but you're coming off of a bye, and you have Georgia the week ahead, after. So you'll never look at that game as a look ahead game or kind of the build up to what's beyond. But you do have to play Georgia at home the week after. So I do think with that game being the last week of the season on a standalone day, that's not a Saturday, so you're going to have more eyeballs on you. It makes sense for that game to have all the expectations and the extra lights coming in over what normally would be that Oklahoma game.
Yeah.
I Vegas likes A&M more than most people like A&M right now.
Agreed. Yeah.
Over under of 8.5 wins for Mike Elko's first year. That's pretty strong in the SEC.
I think they're favorite over Notre Dame, right?
Yeah, I know. And they probably should be. If Wegman's healthy, Wegman's a good quarterback if he's healthy. I mean, he's not – he's a NFL-level quarterback at pretty high level if he's healthy.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see, though. To that point, they have lost quite a bit. Evan Stewart is a loss for offense.
Yeah.
Now Jimbo Fisher didn't necessarily utilize him very well. How much of a loss is he? That's a different story, right? Yeah. They didn't necessarily feel that loss, right, from last year, because he was out the last half of the year anyways. But my thought there is, if they can put together something on the offensive line and stay relatively healthy there, they're going to have a good defense. They're one deep. But they are one deep with mostly NFL players on defense. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So that's the difference where Texas fans need to understand. They don't just have it's not just because Elko's a good defense coordinator. There's actually talent on that defense. That's where the majority of those highly ranked players from those two recruiting classes sit and came in on. And even with a Walter Nolan leaving, a Bryce Anderson is still there, right?
Yeah.
They've got – Shamar Turner still there. They've got guys. So I think they are thinner than they want to be. But one deep, A&M is a very, very, I don't want to say scary, but very, very capable.
Yeah,
formidable.
Opponent. Yeah, formidable. It'd be a good term there, CJ. All right. Hey, before we get going, we got time for a couple more questions on this Sunday night live stream. Before we get to them, I want to say thank you one last time to our sponsor, Joe Brown. Joe's over at Southside Bank. He's been providing mortgages in and around Austin and Texas for more than three decades. Joe's a proud Navy veteran and a devout Longhorn fan, two different degrees. He's helped multiple UT athletes and grads through the years with their home purchases. Give them a call, 512-663-4744. If you're looking for a mortgage today, that's 512-663-4744. And even for those out of state, Southside Bank still works for those guys too. Again, 512-663-4744. Thank you to Joe Brown. All right, a couple more questions. We're going to get to them now. I do want to recap one thing. Women's rowing won the Big 12 championship today. Women's softball advanced to the Super Regionals. They host A&M next Thursday in the Super Regionals. Baseball, they swept Kansas. Texas men's tennis lost in the national championship match 4-3 in tennis earlier today to TCU. What else am I missing?
That's
crazy. Anything else? Texas One Fund raised millions of dollars.
I don't mean to sound arrogant. I'm serious. I want to be serious here about this discussion. Is there a sport that's like down? Like I'm talking about bad down. Because it seems like not every sport's winning championships, but I'm just talking about like down, like Texas 2021 first season under Sark. Like down.
Rod, if you logged on to Texas Twitter, you'd think Texas baseball was down, but they've turned it around the last half. I mean, they've won, eight or nine straight series. I mean, they're sitting third right now in the regular season for the Big 12 standings. They played Texas Tech, who's on an eight-game losing streak, only 5-15 away from home in round one of the Big 12 tournament. That team's figured it out. You know, they understand what their identity is. They hit the long ball, and they don't give up at-bats anymore. That was an issue earlier on in the season. We just watched them walk off two straight games this series against Kansas. One of them, I actually, hand up on me. I walked out in the eighth inning. Go off the game, but I missed that one. I'm sorry. But, no, that team has an identity now. And I think that was a big issue earlier in the year. You'd see and you watch some of those early games against some of those, big opponents in the preseason tournaments, and you think, man, this team just – they just don't have it together, but they've turned it around. They figured it out, and I'm excited to see what they can do. I saw they were projected or mocked or whatever to end up in Wake Forest's regional, with the first round of the postseason tournament. And listen, Wake Forest has a tremendous, tremendous pitching staff. They're a top five team in the entire country. That would be a big hill to climb for Texas. But that ballpark leads me to think that they might be able to put up some runs because the ball jumps out of there. Mm. And if Texas ends up heading over to the East Coast over there, I think there's a good chance what would normally not be a good chance playing a top five team. But that ballpark leads me to think that they might end up, surprising some folks.
Nice. I like that.
Gotcha. All right, Dave, this one's from Thunderpup, guys. He had a little question here maybe for you, CJ, and Rod. You two are the EA Sports big gamers as it relates to NCAA football. With Arch opting out of the EA Sports 25 version, that was a great decision on his part because he would likely would have been on the cover instead of viewers. I don't think he would have been on instead of viewers.
No.
But I will say this, it sets him up for a pretty interesting situation next year. What do y'all think?
I think he's on the cover in 2 years. So not in 25, not the 26 game, but maybe the 27 game. I think Arch is, if he's already got 1 year as a starter under his belt at Texas, they want him on that cover. And I think that may be why he decided, I'm not going to sign the actual agreement, the contract for them to use my name and likeness on this game. I think it sets him up to negotiate a bigger number potentially when he is the starting quarterback, and they definitely want him on the cover of the game. If Texas is really good, which we expect Texas to be really good.
I got to shout out Doc Texas on this one because he's a big guy on Twitter in the Texas world. He put up the tweet the other day of just – kids these days, Rod, will have no idea what it's like to log into this game and see the names of the actual player on the rosters, in the game. Whenever you're controlling someone, you'll have Ewers dropping back the pass, whereas in years past, it was QB number 3 or left quarterback number 21 in your day.
Yeah.
I thought that's really exciting. And to your point about Arch Manning, I mean, if you think that EA Sports isn't looking to potentially throw him on the cover, market him everywhere, not only because he's Arch Manning, but in large part because he's also going to have a Longhorn logo on his chest as well, that opportunity will not be passed up. I think he absolutely will end up on the cover. And I think, again, it's going to be a great opportunity for Texas to market and to kind of, you know, use it as an advertisement for the football program and the university in general.
Yep.
Hold on, Bobby.
Muted. I'm going to say this, and this comes from someone that has been in this business for a long time. Arch Manning clicks. Clicks. And so when, you know, if we put up a video or anybody puts up a video and it says Arch Manning does this, there's going to be a lot of clicks.
Yep.
Okay. Now we're one of the people that we don't just put up names, just be putting up names and try to mislead people. Some people do. And that's, it is the way of the world, right? In the world we live in. Arch Manning is one of those guys that has been, he clicks.
Yep.
And you can say what you want, but Rod, I'll guarantee you that EA is in the business of selling video games.
Yes, sir.
And I wouldn't put it out of their wheelhouse that they do some kind of, you know, Q rating and figure out who those guys are, and they're on the cover in 26.
I would say I almost guarantee that there is some
there's Daniel
with rating. This is how we know that's true, Bobby, because there is no reason for Travis Hunter to be on the cover of that video game if they're basing it off achievement and excellence and what programs are winning the most games. I don't know if there, and CJ, maybe you know, has there ever been a cover athlete from a team that was a losing team the year before?
4-8.
Yeah, I don't know if that's ever happened. 4-8. Yeah, exactly. Why? Because we talked about Colorado probably more than any other team nationally in college football other than Michigan. And there's a Michigan athlete on there, too. Oh, and then there's a Texas athlete. There's
a backup Michigan running back, by the way.
Exactly. They're looking at impressions. They're looking at, you know, who can kind of dominate headlines, who's the most talked about programs in the 2023 season. And think about who's the most talked about programs. Michigan, because of the cheating scandal. Colorado, because of Deion Sanders. And Texas resurgence, because Texas was actually really good in the Final Four. If you break down the three most talked about college football programs in the 2023 season, that was probably it. Then throw in maybe a Florida State, maybe Alabama because of Nick Saban retiring. They're probably throwing in there too. But among the top five, those three were definitely among the top five, if not the most talked about. So I'm with you, Bob. They're looking at that, and they're definitely looking at who gets impressions, who gets clicks. When Arch Manning committed to Texas, I was seeing it on like national news. There were news programs that were covering that had no business covering that story, but they were like, hey, man, it's a Manning, let's do it. So I agree with you 100%, Bobby, no doubt.
Yeah, it just is. Texas is one of those schools.
Yep.
The merchandise sales prove it each and every year, and when they have someone and when Texas is successful, that's just the way the world works. Hey, I mentioned earlier today about the Director's Cup standings. Brett Wilkinson is our Director's Cup, or is the Director's Cup guy. He says women's cross country for the University of Texas will be the lowest score this year. Rod, you were asking which one is down. But here's the deal with that. So Texas chooses to distribute its scholarships towards track and field / cross country. You have to distribute them across the entire program. More of them go to real track. More of them go to the sprint events.
Yes, I gotcha.
And not to the long distance. I mean, look, the men's cross-country champion, I think, like three of the last 4 years, has been Northern Arizona. Not a big-name school, but a small, relatively small school by comparison, because it's a different category altogether. Cody Clearman has something for us here. He wants to say, we better not take any SEC opponent for granted. We were talking about A&M earlier. I tend to agree with this. It starts with Mississippi State, first one out of the gate. You know, can't take any of them for granted. CJ, you and I talked a little bit earlier this year about if there is a trap game for Texas, it's Kentucky.
Yep. Home. Yep.
Absolutely. especially with where that game is. It splits Arkansas and Texas A&M, and, you know, it's going to be right around the season where, you know, folks are going to be getting excited for Thanksgiving, going home, see family, everything along the lines of that. So that, to me, Kentucky plays a very physical style of football in their front seven, and I think they added some really important pieces for their team this year. Obviously, Jamori Macklin, the kid out of North Texas, he's a big one. Gerald Mincy, the tackle from Tennessee. A number of big-time guys. Dumas Johnson, the linebacker from Georgia. They got some dudes. They got some dudes, and that's at a time where Texas will probably be coming off an emotional victory, hopefully, whenever they get back on the plane from Fayetteville. And looking ahead, certainly, to what will be a College game day, you know, type of game or environment whenever they head over to College Station the week after. Luckily for Texas, that game is at home.
I haven't
I don't know why. I think, and I agree with you, TJ, I think it also set it stands out as a trap game to me. Everything about it smells like one, feels like one, even the placement of it. I don't know, for some reason, I always, and I'm sure this is not true, maybe it is, I always figure that Bob Stoops, anytime he's got a chance to beat Texas, where through degrees of separation, his brother, Brett Venables, Lincoln Riley, anytime he's got a disciple that's going up against Texas, I figure Bob Stoops is just in there offering some advice. He's sending some text advice, suggestions. I figure Bob Stoops is in on it, especially with his Mark Stoops. I figure it's a family affair. So I worry about that matchup too, because I figure there are game plans being shared via 6 degrees of separation from the Bob Stoops tree of coaching, from Venables to Lincoln Riley, and they got a text chain going. Oh yeah, we can do this. Do this in Texas, man. Do this. It worked for me. I know it's not true, but in my head, that's what I'm thinking about. That's what I'm thinking about.
Mike Leach, yeah. Mark Mangino, yeah. All those guys just keep going back and back. Yeah. Can you be a bigger thorn in Texas's side?
Yes.
Even Matt Campbell was from Youngstown or something.
Come on.
You know
Jeff Levy's in on that text. Jeff Levy's like, yeah. I got some of this. Let me know. I'm moving on, but I got some of that. It's just it's a family affair to want to beat Texas. And Bob Stoops, man, he did as well as anybody. And I figure he's going to have a little bit of say in that too.
Hey, I want to end it with this one tonight, guys. We were just talking about Arch and all the clicks he generates. Look at this. And I can't double check this right now, but Fox Big Noon advertisement of Texas versus Michigan has Donovan Edwards, the running back that we're talking about, the backup, and not Quinn Ewers, but Arch on their advertisement track.
Clicks. That's how you get the views, Bobby.
If anybody's going to do it, Fox is going to do it.
Take the click. There you go.
That is how that goes. All right, that's going to do it for tonight, guys. Texas men's tennis falls just short, 4-3 to TCU. The Horned Frogs win the national championship. Women's softball, however, win the regionals. They're headed to the super regionals in Austin beginning next Thursday. You can make it out to that game, possible. Texas men's baseball sweeps the Kansas Jayhawks to end the regular season on a strong note. They play Tuesday night, I think it's 7:30. CJ, that sound right to you? 7:30 on Tuesday night for Texas baseball. And then the women's rowing team won the Big 12 championship today as well. Texas also, we will say, did get at least one commitment today that we cannot name yet, because we're going to let that person have their time to shine and enjoy it themselves. So, all right, that'll do it for tonight for the esteemed Rod Babers and young CJ Vogel. This has been the On Texas Football Longhorn live stream on Sunday night. Thanks also to our sponsor, Joe Brown of Southside Bank, veteran mortgage broker, good guy overall. Thank you also to everyone for tuning in, our super chats, as well as our producer, Matt Hutchison. For all three of us and all of you, I hope everybody has a good week. Hook 'em, guys.
Hook 'em.